Yes, this afternoon I would like to talk about how to empowering your meditation, because sometimes you think that why my meditation couldn't go deep, like you find it very difficult, because sometimes some of the qualities that you don't have the qualities to be able to empower your meditation, that's why it couldn't, very difficult to go deep. And these five spiritual faculties, they really help to empower your meditation. That's why it's important. That what are these five spiritual faculties? The first one is faith, like confidence in yourself, and also the confidence in the teaching, confidence in the teacher. Because if you don't have confidence in the teacher, sometimes you have doubts, isn't it? Whether I'm doing the right thing, you know, whether, you know, this is the right thing to do. Shall I continue? Oh, sometimes people ask, shall I do anapanasati? Shall I do metta? Shall I do this? Shall I do that? Shall I do body contemplation, you know, that because you have doubts, because I'm not sure, you have no confidence that, you know, in yourself. And even with the teaching, you know, that's it's important that we arouse that. Just imagine, you don't even have confidence in yourself. It's okay, maybe I can't do it, you know. So why bother, isn't it? You will not arouse that energy. Because when we inspired, how do we feel? Full of energy, isn't it? We feel so much joy when we inspire, especially we have confidence in ourselves. We're full of energy, that actually to help us to arouse the energy. Because without the energy, it's very difficult to sustain, especially if you want to go deep your meditation, you have to be able to stay with your meditation object for a long time. But imagine if you don't have enough energy, can you sustain? You can't sustain, isn't it? That's why it's important that we learn, you know, to sometimes arouse, you know, to get the inspiration, you know, from the teaching, from the teacher, from yourself, you know, that arouse that energy. And that's why you can see this is a sequence, the five spiritual faculties. The first one is faith, confidence in your confidence, and then it followed by energy, because you can see the sequence, it's arouse energy. So when you have energy, you can feel that when you're happy, you have energy, you can feel that the alertness is there, isn't it? You feel alert, you know, you feel the mind become really sharp. When you have no energy, your mind is very dull. So this, you can feel that they arouse the energy. So then the alertness, that empower your mindfulness. You know, your mindfulness becomes sharp. You know, then your mindfulness becomes sharp. And also, then your mind becomes still. You'll be able to sustain your attention for a long time. If your mind, because your mindfulness is not sharp, especially when you practice breath meditation, mindfulness on breath, you know, on your breathing, actually is a very subtle object. Because it's a subtle object, if your mindfulness is not strong enough, very difficult to stay. Very difficult to stay, you sustain your attention on this object, because it's so refined. And your mind is not refined enough, your mindfulness is not sharp enough, so it's very difficult. So you can't sustain, that's why you can't go deep. Little while, you know, can't go on, you know, you give up. And that is the first one is faith, energy, and then the mindfulness. And the fourth one is the stillness. Your mind becomes still, you be able to stay, you know, your attention on the object for a long, long time. Then after that, when your mind becomes really still, so the wisdom, wisdom born of stillness, you have the clarity that the reason why, you know, that if our mind is not still enough, and actually whatever we see, we are not seeing things as they truly are, because we are distorted by the five hindrances. Because when your mind, we are in the deep state, when your mind becomes completely still, the five hindrances being suppressed. What are the five hindrances? The five hindrances is the desires, ill will, restlessness, sloth and torpor, and restlessness and doubt. And that whatever we see actually is been distorted. So that's like whatever we see, because it's always because we can't see that we can't see non-self, and we see that everything that in term of me and mine, and that the even in the jhana state, the deep state, when your mind become completely still, if it's not long enough, if your five hindrances not being suppressed long enough, actually whatever our view is all distorted. We think that we know, but actually it's not, because it's been hindered by the five hindrances. So that's why this, you can see this is a sequence. That's why it's so important that the first qualities, the confidence, that to arouse the energy is important, you know, because that is a sequence that leads to, you know, from arouse, from inspiration, you know, have the faith, you have the inspiration, you have the job, because and then you arouse the energy, and the energy that helps you to strengthen your mindfulness, to become more sharp, because mindfulness is supported by the alertness of the energy, the joy. The joy actually, the energy, the joy is the energy, energy is the joy. And that the alertness actually supported the mindfulness became sharp. Then when your mindfulness is sharp, you'll be able to sustain, you'll be able to stay, you know, and pay on the object, you know, to sustain the attention on the object for a long, long time. Then your mind become really, take some, the mind become completely still. When your mind completely still, you have the clarity, your mind, that time when you're in that absorption state, your mind is completely still. That mind, the mind is very powerful. You have very clear. So whatever, after the, normally when we talk about the contemplation of the three characteristics, it's only happen after you come up from the deep state, the jhana state, because that time your mind is completely still. Then only when you emerge from that state and your mind is very clear, that's no, the five hindrances is not there. So whatever you see, you just purely, you know, you're perceiving things as they truly are. And whatever you see, if not, because with the five hindrances, whatever we see, our views is all distorted. You know, we think that we know it, but actually it's not, because it's your mind have to be so powerful. The mind is so, you have that clarity is so clear, and that is the insight, that is the wisdom. You know, of course we have different level. It's not that you have to, you know, it takes time to go into that stage. But then as your stillness, you know, you be able to sustain longer, and your mind become more and more still. It's that as different level, and also different level of wisdom, you know, different level of clarity. So you have different level of, you know, wisdom. Then you'll be able to see more and more and more. You have more and more clarity. That's why it's important, the first qualities, to arouse that, you know, to have the confidence, to have the inspiration, you feel inspired. And recently, because of the, we're having the Vesak, you know, we have one day retreat. So we did the Buddha Nusati, that is a recollection of the Buddha's quality. So because to inspire us, because sometimes, you know, it's sometimes it's good to do some of this recollection, because it's helped us to arouse that inspiration. And also, I remember someone said, why do we need to bow to the Buddha? You know, and some people think that we are just superstitious, or we just been, you know, we bow to the statue. Actually, the statue is just an image, just to give us, to remind us of actually there's a being like Buddha. So, you know, he practiced, you know, and he walked the path, and also he got fully enlightened. And Buddha, the fact that he's a Buddha, actually he's also just a human being like all of us. But the fact that he's a Buddha, because he's been practicing many, many eons, you know, lifetime, that's come to this stage. And doesn't mean that we all have the potential. So that's why when we bow to the Buddha, actually we are bowing to ourselves too. We too have that potential. We do be able to get enlightened like the Buddha. We do be able to develop those qualities. You know, we are able to do that. Then actually when we do that, actually it inspires us to remind us that, yeah, you know, we have the potential. We be able to do that, you know. And all of us have the potential to do that. Even the Buddha said, if that is not possible, you know, the teaching that I give, you know, if it's not possible for you to do so, for you to get enlightened, why I bothered to teach? He will not bother to teach, isn't it? Since it's impossible, since that you can't, you know, no one can practice, no one can attain, you know, that final liberation. Why bother, you know? But the Buddha said, no, because it is possible. That's why he showed the way, because he said he know that each one of us have the potential. We have the deep knowing, we have the knowing. So we have, each one of us have the potential to achieve the awakening, to be, you know, to achieve that level of clarity, the wisdom, you know. And that's why it's actually the first qualities is important. If we don't have that confidence, we don't have that, we are not inspired. Sometimes each day, you know, oh, the same old breath. Oh, again, you know, every day, nothing happened. Oh, isn't it? Every day, the same old breath, nothing happened. And then you find, you know, eventually you feel so bored. My, you know, meditation, oh, very bored. Because you don't have enough energy. Sometimes it's good to arouse the energy, you know, to give it a little bit, you know, to empower your meditation, to give it, to strengthen your mind a little bit, you know, to strengthen your mindfulness, you know, to empower your meditation. Then you feel so happy, and then you like to meditate again. Sometimes it's good that, you know, some of those recollection is good reflection. You know, sometimes if you want to do reflection on the Buddha qualities, you can do the reflection. Actually, sometimes, especially your lack of confidence in yourself, and sometimes recollections of your reflection on your own virtue, you know, your goodness, the good things you have done. This is one thing that Buddha's always encourages us to do, to recollect, to reflect on our generosity, our kindness, and reflect on that. That also helps. You know, to arouse that. But of course, I have to I discourage people, like, just, you know, sit down and immediately they do recollection. Because I come across someone that, because this person, that she don't have enough confidence in herself, like she's always, like, you know, thinking that she's not good enough. So I suggested her, like, you know, sometimes it's good to do some reflection, you know, to recollect, to reflect on your goodness, because this person is very kind and very generous. So I said, you just reflect on that. That at least give you the joy, the happiness. And then this person ended up that each time she sit down, she only just keep doing that. And after that, she stopped there, you know. Then I told her, no, it's not good enough. Then you never go deep. You know, you're only on that level, you never go deep. I said, no, that is only helped you, you know, to support your meditation to go deep, but you don't stop there. And then, because she be doing that for a while, and become a habit, like, you know, and then it's ended up like she's just like all the, like, fantasizing, you know, sitting there, oh, I'm so good, oh, I'm so great, you know, and then just stop there. And each time for an hour, sit there, is doing that. So I said, you have no wisdom. You know, your mind don't, your meditation don't go deep, have no wisdom. I said, no, you have to stop. But first of all, you start with just, you know, as many people that they try to rush. You don't need to rush. There's no time to lose. You know, just sit down, just relax. Just relax your body. Because as you relax your body, actually is a way to calming your mind and body. This helped you to calming your... And I remember someone asked me, he said, I don't quite understand why Ajahn Brahm always said, relax to the max. What does this mean? He said, are we not doing anything? I said, actually what he means is that when you relax, you let go, you know, you actually, you're calming your body and mind is a way to calming before, because sometimes people sit down, they try very hard to focus. The harder you try, the worse. Actually, it's counterproductive. It's not helpful at all. It's not really helpful at all. And then you have no progress. So you just relax your body and you can do some body contemplation, you know, because body contemplation is a causal object. So you just start with causal object to develop, to strengthen your mindfulness from causal object. So you can't force, you know. And after that, you know, because when you do reflection, your mind have to be relatively peaceful and calm. Because if your mind is not peaceful and calm enough, when you do reflection, sometimes it's become thinking, you know. It's not reflection, it's not deep, it's you're sucking into all the thinking, you know. And sometimes fantasizing is because when you do reflection, reflection, your mind have to be relatively peaceful and calm. So then I told this person, you cannot do that. I said, no, you have become like into not really reflection, you know, you're really like thinking, you know, thinking and fantasizing, and then actually it's no good. I said, you have to stop, you know. They said sometimes it's important, like people, we suggest something, you know, but sometimes like, you know, if you don't go for, you know, ask for advice, you know, and then actually you go the wrong path, you know. Actually, sometimes it's not the method, it's a problem. Sometimes it's how you apply it is a problem, you know. Sometimes this is how people apply it in the problem, because this is how this person, the way she applied is a problem. It's not that what I suggest to her is a problem. And then I said, no, you have to stop. I said, you can't always do that. If not, you can never. Then she ended up like hardly really, you know, go deep. Then you have no wisdom because you don't have the clarity. The clarity is not there. Her meditation never go deep. So that's why you relax your body first, you know. You can do body contemplation. You just, you know, take a bit of time. No need to rush. Until you feel relatively, you can feel the peace and calm. You feel your mind is really more settled. Then you can start to do reflection. Do reflection, you know, recollection of the... Of any qualities. Maybe sometimes if you find yourself that you lack of gratitude, you need more, you know, some of the qualities you need more, then you can reflect on those qualities, and that helps you, you know, to arouse that inspiration. And then after that, you know, when you arouse that energy and then the faith in yourself, you can feel that your mind is more alert. And then you, after that, you stay with that for a little while. Then sometimes you have to drop. You have to drop that, you know. Sometimes people tend to, you know, then you will stuck there, you know. You have to drop. Then you go to, actually, it's naturally you can feel the breath very, very clear when your mind become peaceful, calm. And especially when your mindfulness become more being strengthened, then you go back to your breath, and then continue. And then because you have more energy, and then your mindfulness is more sharp, then you'll be able to stay with your breath, because the breath can take you to deeper state, to do the absorption, to become completely still. Because it's a subtle object, so your mind becomes more and more and more refined. Because those joy, pity, sukha, and the rapture actually is that's still the excitement there. So that's why we have to, if we want to go deep, that one we have to slowly drop. So we have to give up the cause of happiness for more refined happiness. You go deeper and deeper and deeper. So that's why you continue with the breath. So not to just stay there, you know, just be happy. Then every day you do a little bit, feel happy, and then you stop. Then you meditate for 10 years, 20 years, you know, you have no progress. You have no wisdom. The wisdom is not there because your mind is not still enough. So to develop that wisdom, don't have enough clarity. That's why you go back to the breath again. And you can sit for a long time, you know. When you do, relax your body slowly, no need to rush, you know. Just stay a little while to strengthen your mindfulness, to develop my mindfulness, you know, establish your mindfulness, you know, energy, arouse energy, then your mind become still, then you become, your meditation will go deep. And this is how you empowering your meditation by develop this quality, these five spiritual faculties. And this is today meditation instruction. So we will do this guided meditation. So just choose a comfortable posture. Just make yourself as comfortable as you can. Just spend a little bit of time. Bring your attention, your awareness to your body. Just stay in this present moment awareness. Just to aware of how you feel in this moment. Aware of your bodily feelings, sensations. Is there any tightness or tension in your body? Just being aware. And not to try to control or get rid of it. Just knowing how you feel in this moment. And you find any tightness and tension in your body. Just very softly and gently say to yourself, just relax. You can start from the head of the body, the top of your body, from the head. You can slowly to your neck, to your shoulder, and just relax. Just aware any part of your body, your feelings and sensations. Relaxing your body is also help to release all the tension being built up in the body, and also those unresolved emotions. As you started to feel there's a peace and calm within your mind and body, as your mind calming down, and just stay with that for a little while. and we start to recollect the qualities of the Buddha. The Buddha is an arahant. He's accomplished and attained the finality of liberation, have destroyed all the defilements, and not to reborn again. And the second qualities, Sama Sambuddho, he's fully enlightened, and he has understood the three paths of Four Noble Truths. So the third quality is Vijacharanan Sampanno, that is endowed with clear vision, that the three knowledges and also perfect virtues. Sukhato, so he is supplying, achieve the bliss of Nibbana. Lokavidu, he is the knower of the world. The Buddha taught us thousands of world systems in our universe, where life exists, and also spheres of existence. Anuttaro Purisa Dhammasarati, that's the Buddha. He trains perfectly those who wish to be trained. Have the greatest knowledge of people's tendency, he be able to attune the listener and adapt the teaching, his teaching specifically to it. Satta Deva Manusanam, that means that he's a teacher of gods and humans. Putto, the eight quality Putto. Putto means that the Buddha is awakened. The one who knows. Bhagava, the last one, is that he's blessed, he's holy. It's more like a tribute to the Buddha. So we aspired to have all these qualities like the Buddha. We do have the potential. To develop and establish those qualities. And now you can bring your attention onto your breath, just being aware your in breath and out breath, just simply aware of your breathing in and breathing out. And continue mindfulness on your breath. Just stay with your breath and fully aware and fully present of each single breathing in breath and out breath. So we end this meditation session. Any questions or comments?
Really a question, but just a thank you for coming down. And just so people know, at 5 o'clock we've got the Kalyana Friendship Community.
Okay.
Yep. And yeah. I'm hoping Venerable Paramita
Can
join us.
So 5 o'clock.
It's such a rare opportunity to sit and talk with the nuns. So please come along. 5 o'clock, 5 to 6.
Okay. Okay, there's one question. They said, yesterday you talked about how monks work hard to insight with the mind. What are the things you dealt with mostly? Please advise on how we can stop comparing life to others and let go of it. Yes, you know, because of we're talking about that, you know, like some people think that monks and nuns, because they don't work, so they're lazy, they don't want to work. But then we were talking about actually the inner work, you know, working with the mind is harder, because we constantly have to, especially in the monastic, and you give up lots of things, and then you don't have much control. Especially if we don't have sense of self, we are not here. The most difficult part is that losing the sense of self, that is a part that, you know, it's quite scary, you know, because like for us, we can't choose, you know, like because we are not holding money, so we don't have control, you know, using money, so we can't get what we want. Even we think that we have enough, we want to run away, also we can't, we have no money, you know, can't even run away. And this is especially not so much with the physical work, but actually more that you feel like, you know, like because how we cover up ourselves, you know, with the sense of self, you know, that, you know, how we identify who we are and pretend to who we are. But then we come to the monastery, you know, like all this covering, you know, you have to strip off, you know. Then you feel like you are naked, like you have to be true to yourself. You have to constantly have to look at yourself, because we tend to, you know, when we are outside, it's very easily we just distract ourselves, you know, like some people go for shopping, or you know, you feel bored, you call your friend, and then we don't have to deal with, to look at the some of those unresolved emotions that we have, you know. And especially in the kind of environment, especially in the monastery, because it's very peaceful and very, you know, peaceful and calm. And then when your mind becomes settled, a lot of unresolved emotions that tends to, you know, emerge, is quite, you know, it's normal. That's why sometimes people mentally not strong enough, sometimes can be very overwhelming. But we have to look at that, you know, because if we keep pushing it down, actually it will get worse, because we reinforce. But then it's not something that is pleasant, you know, to deal with, to look at it, because it's the easiest way is to run away, you know, not to face it, you know, and distract yourself, you know, to do some other work. But this, you really being forced that you have to look at it, whether you like it or not, you know, because very easy, especially we've been conditioned, like run away from things that we don't like, isn't it? Like immediately we have that reaction. Things that we like, we get attached to it, isn't it? When we want more. Things that unpleasant, our reaction is, we don't like it, you know, we run away. And that is just natural. And that actually, yeah, it's especially, you know, losing with the sense of self. But of course, after a while, you find that worth it. Yeah, it's hard work, you know, but slowly you learn, you know, to deal with it, to look at it. And it takes lots of practice, it takes time, you know. That's why I keep telling people, you know, the longer I live, I stay in robes in the monastery, living this monastic life, the longer you practice, the more you practice. I said, I find that the less you know. And I realized that the more you don't, you know what you don't know, the more you don't know, you find, oh, you know, sometimes you think that you know that, you know, everything, you know them all, but actually you realize, oh, actually I know so little, you know. And the more you practice, you find that the less, because the path of this practice is helped you to let go of the sense of self, the controlling. Because the way we live the lifestyle, you know, and then we have to, we share things, we live in a community, and you have to put up for us, like we have, you know, the nuns, we have like, I think 7 or 8, I forgot, annex group, they come from different background, nationality. Imagine you have to live with people that in, you know, different, you know, upbringing, background, you know, ethnic groups, you know, and that is so different, so diverse, that you have to live together. Then that is how much work, you know, you have to learn to develop that kindness, compassion, being someone forgiven, and that is a practice. That's why I like the simile that one of the Korean nuns told us, that what her teacher told her. He said, all the nuns, you know, all this one, we live together as a community. It's just like you put a bunch of protectors in the back and you have to shake it. Eventually it comes out clean. So yes, you know, we live together, you know, of course we have rubs, you know, we have different views and opinions, different conditioning, upbringing, you know, that's how this is how we forced to look at how we react, and then we start to see certain tendency that causes suffering, and that is where this is the realization, you know, that's how we grow, and then eventually we become a kinder and more compassionate person. So actually the way the monastery set up, the way the training, and also because of we have to keep higher virtue, we beside our Patimokkha rules, we have to keep a monastery rules, and that because keeping those rules help us to restrain ourselves, to come to the understanding that actually restraining ourselves, actually those all minor rules actually is not immoral by itself. You know, but actually it's helped you to strengthen your mindfulness. You become more aware, more mindful that you're sharing, you know, you're sharing the material beings, material things, or the space, you know, with others. So we have the kindness and compassion towards others. That's like, even, you know, we also have to remind them, nuns, that even the way, you know, when after you use a toilet, also you make sure that you check it's clean for the next one. That actually the way we live actually is also that help us to, you know, develop those quality like kindness, compassion. So this is how actually the practice is not only sit on the meditation, the way of life, how we live, and then, you know, we can't choose that, you know, and what we eat, you know, And then even that you're given a choice whether you like it or not, you know, you just have to do it, you know. You cannot choose, you know, you cannot follow your desires, you cannot, you know. And this is actually help us to restrain our defilements. And then this is how to, this is to purify, and then we cannot control, you know. And that's that the most difficult thing is that you lose control, you know, because when you by yourself, you can choose what you eat, you can choose what you do, you can do the way you want it to be. But in the monastery, you have a certain way of doing things, you know. Yeah, we might have a better way of doing it. This is might not be the best way, but we let go of our attachment, of our views, how things should be, because the way of life, and this is how is the way of life really help us, you know, to really take off all the rough edges, you know. You know, it's help us with that, you know, polish, and it takes time. And that's why it's quite, it's not easy, especially if someone mentally is not strong enough, actually it's quite tough, you know. It's quite tough, you know, with the inner world, because your mind have to be really strong enough to be able to deal with that, because you know, we go back, we have plenty of time, you know, they have the time go back, you know, that's the time you look at. But to me, I'm quite okay, because I think maybe partly because of my karmic inheritance, even before I become because I come to become a nun, actually I started to practice, and I enjoy the lifestyle so much. And also, then the way I think, because I think the attitude is important, because my attitude towards that, to me, like, okay, go back to my kuti, what comes up. To me, I think it's like, okay, to me, it's like entertainment, like sit on another chair, this channel come up, what's crazy come up, you know? And I look at it, just have a bit of laugh, okay, that's it, you know? And you know, the way I don't identify this myself as terrible or bad, you know. So sometimes I just make it like fun, you know, like, you know, okay, just look at the mind, what comes up, you know. And just to me, it's just like, oh, this is like, I just treat this as a entertainment, you know, whatever defilements come up. So I look at it, I entertain myself, you know, okay, you know, we have no TV, no television, okay, maybe I look at this, look at my mind, like watching television, you know, whatever comes up. So to me, I don't find that difficult, but I know some might be very difficult, you know. For me, if even before I become a nun, it's not because I want to become a nun. Actually, I just enjoy the lifestyle. I just like the way of life, you know. Then I become a nun, and that's like, to me, like, I don't find that much difficult. The only thing starting when is only the only thing is that to me, that is only thing that you have to let go of your sense of self. That is a quite that is the most difficult part, you know. And it's actually losing your sense of self, you know, you have to let go of that. It's quite difficult to let go. Like me, my views, my opinion, me, you know, everything about me. And that part is quite, you know, because you just, you know, you have to surrender yourself to this lifestyle, to let go of what, you know, what you want to do, you know. You cannot control, and you have no choice. You know, whatever you need to do, you do, you know. And you can't say, oh, I don't like it, I don't want to do it, you know. You have to do it. Sometimes, especially like now in my position, sometimes I have to, you know, with all the responsibility, and usually in the monastery during dana time, I normally give a short dharma reflections, and of course sometimes with the busyness, you know, with you know you have to dealing with all sorts of things, you know. Sometimes I have to, you know, look after the nuns, sometimes I still have to talk to them, you know, and things like that. And whether you like it or not, at days that you feel like giving a talk, you give a talk. You don't feel like giving a talk, you still give a talk. And then this is how you just surrender, whether you like it or not. Then, you know, then I find that it's very useful. After a while, you find that you become quite equanimous to whatever happened. Actually, doesn't bother me much, you know, whatever people said, whatever people do, you know. And then it not easily trigger me, you know, like I don't, it quite, you become more and more equanimous, whatever happened. Okay, well, this, what do you expect? You know, to me, I always remind people that, you know, that is part of life, that we always have, having problem is part of life, you know. And what do you expect, you know? So to me, like, having problem is normal. So when things goes my way, you know, then to me, it's like a bonus to me. Like bonus. Things didn't go my way is normal. Then that's why, then things didn't go my way, it didn't really upset me so much. I think because of the being in the monastery, you know, been 20 years, then actually you quite, you know, all these years of practice, so your mind become more, you know, stable and more equanimous, you know. And it actually takes lots of practice, you know, the comparing life to others and let it go. The letting go cannot happen overnight. There's no, they don't have like a recipe, you know. I tell you how to let go and then you let go and then you get it done. No, take lots of practice, you know. Letting go happen little by little. There's no special recipe. If I had special recipe, I would have used it long ago. Isn't it? God got enlightened long ago. Gloria Wong, when I meditate in bad emotion status, I feel pain in my body because of strong emotional pain, usually in the chest area and in the stomach. When I try to stay with it, how to hold the emotion pain in better ways? It's necessary to calm it down. Actually, that pain, a lot of people try to, like, for example, when we talk about, oh, you do, you know, when you do body contemplation, stay with the pain. And then, but if you come from the place that I stay with the pain, my pain go away, I can tell you it doesn't work that way. You know, you have to come to a place of completely be able to accept how you feel. But a lot of people, you know, they're not come from a place of just being with how they feel, but actually they have the underlying, you know, the underlying motive, that they have the intention. I'm doing this so that my pain go away. So besides this one, and then of course, when you're in bad emotion, actually you have to, it takes time. Sometimes, you know, for me is I just sitting there and just stay with that. And I think you have to come to a place of acceptance, because when the chest is, because of the emotion is come from all the building up of unresolved emotions. So whenever you have that emotion, actually that is all the tension you feel, that it's quite normal when we have the chest pain. And some, if you practice, you know, body contemplation, if you become very skillful, actually you don't have to wait to the point that when you feel the pain in your chest or in your stomach, but actually you pick it up very quick. You can feel when it is come, even that slightest tightness, you know, because when you come to the point it's very pain, actually it's already, you know, actually the emotion, you know, already started. Yeah, because your mindfulness is not sharp enough to pick it up. But if you practice, you know, especially if a skill, you know, in a doing body contemplation, actually you can feel it very quick. You know, when you can even start to feel that, you know, the tiny bit of, you know, that if you, the chest, you know, feel tight, it's coming, you know, and the stomach is coming. And then you just aware of that and stay with that. But because of sometimes your mindfulness is not sharp enough, you don't pick it up. So it's just like, you know, when the fire start, you know, that from spark, and then the fire, small fire, it grow bigger and bigger. So until when you have the stomach pain, chest pain, it's the fire already, you know, from a spark, and then it goes, you know, bigger and bigger. So that is more difficult to deal with. It's more difficult to put it out. That's why it takes a bit of practice, you know. So we don't try to hold the emotion pain in a better way. We don't try to hold it. Actually, we just try. It's how to explain, because actually you don't try to put up with that. You know, oh, it's okay. It's the pain. Actually, you have to have the loving kindness towards that. Come to a place of acceptance. And I think most people, because of they have this pain, because they're not accepting that, they're like, I don't like this, I don't want this because it's painful. But letting go actually is accepting that, yes, this is how I feel. Not thinking of, you know, getting rid of it. But most people that they try, you know, when we say, oh, you decide to stay with that, then they come from a place that, oh, I stay with it, that it will go away. So the moment you think like that, the moment you have that intention, it doesn't work. But you have to come from the place that you truly, you know, that be with that moment, and then just be with in the present moment awareness, and just open up and how you feel. But sometimes if you find it difficult, sometimes it's good that send loving kindness towards that. Then because I think because of the mindfulness is not strong enough to stay with that pain. So that's why I suggest that, you know, to send loving kindness towards your for example, your chest or stomach, if you feel the pain. So you just send loving kindness. It's actually helped you to soften up. Oh, may I have no stomach pain, may I have no chest pain. And that's help to release rather than to hold. Because to be able to stay with that, also your mindfulness have to be strong enough to be, you know, sharp enough to stay with that. And even though that is a causal object, but, you know, it takes time. So that is also, you know, you can send loving kindness towards your body, and, you know, may the pain in my stomach, you know, go. You don't wish it to go away. May I feel better, you know, with my stomach, you know, pain or chest pain, you know. May I be well and happy. May I free of but not to say go away. You don't wish it go away, like you get rid of it, you know. But we don't get rid of it, because when you have the intention of get rid of it, that is like you will. I don't want this, you know. This is how, you know, and also give you that like psychologically that it's okay. You come to a place of acceptance. So and also. Also do the breathing exercise is also helpful. You just breathe in the pain, you know, the chest, the pain of the chest or in the stomach. You just breathing in the pain, and you're breathing out peace. It's okay. You make peace with the pain. It's okay to have the pain, because we have the underlying tendency that whatever that is unpleasant, we have the tendency to push it away. And because we do it without knowing, like subconsciously doing it without knowing that we are doing that. Because it's very refined. Subtly we are doing it. We don't even know that we're doing it. So doing the breathing exercise also help. And also sending loving kindness to your chest, you know, that also help. But if you investigate, actually, if you come from a place that you try to stay with that, and so that it go away, it doesn't work, okay? And also, what your advice for a single woman in her 60s wanting to join a non-sangha with Metta from Auckland? Okay. For us, I don't know in Auckland, Dhammasara, we do have a age limit. So that's we on the, our age limit is 50. So then, yeah, 60 then, sorry. You know, Dhammasara normally, we don't, you know, we have the age limit up to 50. So that's the questions. Any more questions or comments? No more questions, comments? Mm-hmm. Okay. Okay. So everyday practice, actually, one of the very simple practice, and you try to apply it in your daily life. Whatever you do, you try to apply present moment awareness. Stay with what you're doing at this moment. For example, if you're doing dishes, you're washing dishes, sometimes, of course, your mind will wander off, isn't it? Thinking of other things, you know. Then you have to train your mind, know one thing of the time, you know. And sometimes, oh, you think, sometimes, you know, people think of something, then they drop this and they do other thing. No. You're just aware of your mind wander off and you stay. You stay with what you are doing this moment. And this is you train your mind being present. And then when your mind being present, and this is how, when you practice present moment awareness, it helps you to establish your mindfulness. You know, when your mindfulness is sharp, you have more clarity. So then you become more aware of how you're, sometimes when you're not aware, sometimes people don't even aware of feelings, you know, the thoughts, you know, that just the particular thoughts, you know, just, you know, arises that moment, you already latch onto that, you know, and then go on and on and on. But when you have mindfulness, you're aware, oh, this is something unwholesome, you know, this is something that I'm not going to get myself into because it will cause me suffering. And then, okay, you just stay okay. You be able to just not to allow that to overcome to you, because we very easily get drawn in, you know, because lack of mindfulness, we are not mindful. And then we spend so much time, you know, we revisit our past. Can be already done, you know, already passed, and then carry the guilt, or when we worry about the future, and the things that we worry about may not happen. But this is very simple. You train your mind, you know, apply present moment awareness, practice present moment awareness. Try to do one thing at a time. Try to bring your mind, you know, like, for example, sometimes people doing, you know, when they're eating, they start to think the next meal, isn't it? Then you know that, oh, this coming, then you bring your mind back, focus, you know, pay attention on your eating, then you'll be able to enjoy your food much more, rather than, you know, you're eating, but you don't know, you don't even aware of how your food tastes, because while you're eating, your mind is just wander off, you know, thinking of other things, but you bring your mind back, just being with whatever you do, you're fully here, you're eating, you're fully eating, you're fully with eating. It takes a bit of training, it's okay, even it's wander off, you keep, you know, bring it back, and this is how slowly you become more and more aware of your feeling, your sensation. And that's like this person also, like she talked about the emotional back, like when he said, when he's got emotional state, he feel the chest pain. But because if you in daily life, if you practice present moment awareness, it's helped you to establish your mindfulness. Then your mindfulness become more sharp. Then you easily pick it up quicker. You know, you'll be able to see that. If you're mindful. But sometimes, if you're not mindful, we already carry away, you know. And then even gone to Siberia without knowing how you get there, you know. Your mind go on and on and on and on. You know? But this is a very simple, it's simple but not easy, you know, to stay present. And that's helped you. You know, you can apply this in your daily life, whatever you do. And we will see the difference after a while when you practice. You can see that your mind become, you're more sharp, and you find that your mindfulness becomes, you know, more, you know, sharper. You become more alert. You can feel the difference. It takes a bit of practice. So you apply this in your daily life. Try to be, you know, practice present moment awareness. That's truly help. Yeah. So any more questions or comments? No? Okay, thank you.